religious liberty is the foundational liberty for all forms of free expression. Without religious liberty protected both in law and in spirit, the First Amendment is a dead letter.
Mark Hemingway, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And as a result of that, it is vital to understand that the attack on religious liberty is ultimately about political control. It's an unholy admixture of political correctness and bureaucratic imperatives. There's a growing governmental and political infrastructure dedicated to curtailing basic rights for whom Christian bakers and florists are just the tip of the spear. And there's already mountains of evidence that this infrastructure won't just be used to persecute allegedly bigoted Christians, but it'll be used to go after everyone who is speaking out against those in power.
You can listen to Making the Case for Religious Liberty with Mark Hemingway on an audio DVD of our 2017 Making the Case conferences. We'll send it to you for a financial gift of $300. Look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
The whole point of free speech protections is to make sure that you have the freedom to say things that other people want to stop you from saying.
That's how we know, and that's how the oil of the Spirit and faith remains kindled in our hearts.
Wait a cotton picking minute here. We'll show you where what we teach is in fact founded in the sacred scriptures, and to show you that we're not innovators, we'll show you from the writings of the fathers that they understood these things the exact same way that we do.
Understanding the boundaries between the two kingdoms, we're not going to come to a proper conclusion on what the role of the state is if we're using that distinction to justify voting for people that we would have condemned the other political side from voting for 5 seconds ago.
That's a little taste of the sound bites that you will hear and you'll vote for when we play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week at the end of the next hour of Issues Etc. You can vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943, sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page and vote in advance, facebook.com/issuesetc. There are a few things that I would associate together, like, say, a porn star and a Christian baker refusing to bake a cake for a gay couple. I wouldn't draw a line between those two ordinarily, but there is a connection between the tragic life and recent death of a porn star, August Ames, and the case that the Supreme Court heard recently of Jack Phillips, who was, well, being pressured legally by the state of Colorado to bake a cake that would send a message violating his convictions. Joining us to talk about the consequences of crossing the LGBTQ movement, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Porn Star Commits Suicide After Mob Hounds Her for Refusing Partner Who Had Gay Sex. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always glad to be back on Issues.
What is the now famous Christian baker, Jack Phillips, whose case was recently heard in the U.S. Supreme Court, what does he have to do with August Ames, the tragic story we recently read about the life and the death of this young woman?
Well, this young woman was a, you know, porn actress, and what happened was this, was that she had stated publicly about that she had backed out of doing a particular pornography shoot because she found out that the man that she was supposed to perform with, as it were, had done gay pornography in the past. Now, apparently this is a fairly common thing in the pornography industry, that women commonly won't work with what they call crossovers, people that also work, men that also work in gay porn. And the reason being is it's just simply the logic of quarantine. The fact of the matter is that, incidents of STDs and HIV are much, much higher in the gay population among people with gay sex. So women, as a matter of managing health risks, have just, you know, it's been sort of a standard practice for a lot of women in pornography. They just don't have sex with other men that have sex with men, basically. And when she said this publicly, she was basically just days of online hate calling her homophobic. And, as I point out in the piece that, you know, with regards, this porn actress actually committed suicide the same day that the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case involving a Christian baker who wouldn't make cakes for gay people. And I pornography actress and a baker, it's kind of a stretch to compare the two in some respects. But the same basic logic here applies, which is they're saying in the case of the Christian Baker, if you're open to the public, as it were, you have to serve everybody, you know, regardless of you know, without discriminating, you know, against the private behavior of individuals or, you know, deference to, you know, religious beliefs. In this case, we have a situation here where, you know, we have a pornography actress who has sex with, you know, men that she doesn't always, she gets sex with many different men, and she is theoretically open for business, as it were. And the people hounding her were basically applying the same logic, which is to say that, well, if you're going to have sex with, you know, any, you know, man somewhat indiscriminately, you can't discriminate against an entire class of people. And that's basically what I was trying to get at.
But there is, as you point out, a word for when a woman is threatened or bullied into having sex with someone they don't want to, right?
Right. And that word is rape. We move very quickly, you know, from her body, her choice, to a situation here where, you know, this woman was being hounded because she was uncomfortable having sex with someone to the point that, you know, she killed herself. I mean, I should clarify that, you know, that she was a pornography actress, which, you know, almost by definition means that she had a troubled childhood and some other, you know, issues here that were in play. You know, it's hard to blame a, you know, online mob for, you know, killing her, but, you know, it certainly didn't help. And several people specifically suggested that she kill herself in the wake of this. So, yeah, it's the connection here seems, you know, not something that can easily be ignored.
You write this. You say, I don't think it's a stretch to say that a mob that would tell Ames to kill herself if she won't have sex with someone who has had sex with other men would also happily pass a law requiring porn stars, in this case, it is a business, to be subject to penalties for discriminating in whom they sleep with. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, I think that's exactly right. I mean, basically, she's being accused of discrimination. She's being accused of doing something that is, you know, economically damaging because it creates a stigma for, you know, bisexual and gay men that are trying to work in the porn industry by, you know, sending the message that they are, in her view, unsafe and risky to have sex with. So, it seems very clear to me that the people who are upset about this and so upset that they would, you know, seek her out online, you know, by the thousands and say nasty things about her are going to have no problem seeing this as some grave injustice that they must rectify by, you know, passing a law. You know, it really is a situation here where I think that people really are view this kind of injustice as needing a legal remedy.
The crazy thing about this is she wasn't acting according to conscience. It wasn't her conscience that kept her from having sex with men who'd done gay porn. It was just a basic concern about her own health and well-being.
That's exactly right. In fact, she said, I'm not homophobic. And in fact, you know, she claimed that she was attracted to women. So, you know, she was at pains to suggest that's the case. And again, she is, like I said, this is kind of a common industry practice within the world of pornography. A lot of women just won't sleep with men who have sex with other men simply because of the risk involved, you know, and this is not something. Now, granted, everyone who does pornography on the level that she was doing it, you know, in the, you know, industry in the San Fernando Valley or whatever, they do have, you know, a fairly rigorous testing process in place that is done regularly, supposedly to clear people to do, say, they're free and clear of disease in order to do these sorts of things. But even still, it's pretty undeniable. Again, this is just, you know, hard science. I mean, this is the CDC, you know, will verify this, that STD incidence and HIV incidence among gay men is astronomically higher than the general population of straight people. And I think to some degree, you know, it reflects sort of, you know, cultural attitudes in a way that's kind of, you know, alarming. You know, if people in the straight pornography industry who aren't exactly discriminating about their own risky sex behavior view the behavior among the gay community in the pornography industry as being risky, then, I mean, that really tells you something, that, you know, they really, you know, that's got to be a pretty significant leap for them to be concerned about it. But, you know, it's also true, I think, that we shouldn't tar and feather the entire gay community simply, or judge them by the metrics of gay porn performers. But clearly there's an element among, you know, the gay community that does engage in extremely risky behavior. And, you know, even people in the pornography industry are aware of this.
And you point out that there have been suggestions, albeit from kind of deep within the LGBTQ community, that if a man isn't willing to date a transgendered woman, a man pretending to be a woman, then he's transphobic. And it's been suggested from within the LGBT community that one's own HIV status should be one's own business.
Yeah, no, people are saying both of these things, you know, quite out loud. I mean, it's pretty amazing. You know, like I said, you know, it really is amazing sort of how fast we shifted on these issues, how, you know, quickly these things, you know, moved along. I mean, California passed a law earlier this year that basically reduce the criminal penalties for knowingly exposing someone to HIV. And this has in fact been a big cause in the gay community for some time now, which is to reduce the quote unquote stigma involved in having HIV. And so that means, of course, you know, changing the laws so as not to penalize people who engage in risky behavior and or endanger the health of others. I mean, I don't quite follow that logic, but, you know, it certainly suggests that people would be very wary to have exposure to sex with people who are having sex with other men, because clearly the gay community is not exactly taking seriously the public health risk involved. You know, like I said, this is not an issue of homophobia. This is simply following the logic of quarantine, basically.
Finally, talk about just the level of crazy that we're dealing with now. You've been a journalist for some time. Did you ever think you would be writing a story or a commentary that was this convoluted with respect to the sexual revolution?
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, it's just amazing how fast this stuff is moving. You know, as I point out in the piece, you know, we went very quickly from, you know, bake the cake bigot to take your dress off bigot. And, you know, there is almost nothing, it appears, that people will not force someone else to do in the name of, you know, identity politics, in the name of, quote unquote, you know, not discriminating. I just don't see how this ends well at all. This, you know, it's incredible how personally people take these issues, you know, as I pointed out with, you know, all the nastiness online that this, you know, poor woman was exposed to. It's just people take these sorts of things, that people take the notion that they can't have sex with anyone they want at any time as some sort of personal affront. And that's literally where we're headed in this culture. And I just find it amazing that we are restricting every freedom known to man, from, you know, everything from, you know, what sodas you drink to, you know, what firearms you can own and all these other things. But the one totally inviolable freedom is related to personal autonomy and sex. You know, you can do absolutely anything you want sexually, and you should be totally free from judgment by other people. And if, you know, anyone even thinks about, you know, judging you for your sexual behavior, then they want to pass a law against that. And if we're headed to a society where the only freedom we have is this, you know, crazy notion of, you know, letting people have sex with whoever, whenever, then the consequences of that are going to be truly frightening, I think.
I guess one other thought here. Is it conceivable that we would move from you should be free to you have to, period?
Well, that's what I said in the piece. I mean, and the joke for a long time was, it's not just that you'll have to approve of gay sex, it will become mandatory. You know, people used to say that, you know, jokingly. But, I mean, this is a case where we're bumping up to something very, very close to that. People were very, very upset that, you know, this woman would not have sex with a man who, you know, is at least on some level, you know, gay himself. And that's just, you know, totally insane. You know, if we are no longer able to hold to something as inviolable as, you know, our sexual preferences or valuing sex as it relates to marriage and reproduction, then, you know, the consequences are just going to be incredibly, incredibly damaging to society as a whole.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "Porn Star Commits Suicide After Mob Hounds Her for Refusing Partner Who Had Gay Sex." You can read it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, since it is the Advent season, we're going to study an Advent hymn on Jordan's Bank, the Baptist Cry. Dr. Arthur Just of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be with us. Why are we singing about John the Baptist in Advent? Stay tuned.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Comfort, comfort, ye my people, for unto us a child is born, good news of great joy, the titles of Christ, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christmas card themes produced by Ad Crucem. Send a greeting card this Christmas season that's centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. AdCrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com, ADCRUCEM.com.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today, there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armedforces. The LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.